Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Susan Franzen, one of your hosts for today. Today, we have three co-hosts. Ursula Rudenberg and Joy B are here with me as well to host today's show.
Hi, this is Joy B. Later in the program, I will be interviewing Lori Allen from Access, our local sexual assault care center. Lori will be introducing a new program that will be unveiled this month by Access and Iowa State University called Green Dot. The program was designed to reduce danger from sexual assault.
Before, we want to tell you about two upcoming events in Central Iowa that should prove spectacular. One is in Dallas County and one is in Hamilton County. This is about as far afield as we go on Local Talk Wednesday, but we want you to know about these events. A Prairie Awakening is an annual event that will happen again this coming Sunday, September 10th, in Dallas County at the Keene Conservation Area. Pat Schlarbaum, KHOI's nature reporter, spoke with Chris Atkins, environmental education naturalist for Dallas County.
Well, today with Chris Atkins, environmental education naturalist for Dallas County. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Pat. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, let's talk about your upcoming, and it used to be referred to as the Prairie Awakening. Tell us a bit about your event.
Well, Pat, this started, and it's next year will be 20 years that we've been doing it, so it's developing some traditions and histories of its own. It was all an outgrowth of a conversation within our County Conservation Board between me as an environmental educator and our operations people who are doing prairie restoration and ecosystem preservation and restoration, and we were trying to take a depth sounding to say, are we actually succeeding? Are we bringing back and protecting wild places? Can we document that by kind of, if you build it, they will come? That we were doing bird surveys and invertebrate surveys and reptilian stuff, you know, herps to see.
Yeah.
As we increase the prevalence of natural habitats, are the beings coming back? And one of the questions was asked is, are the humans coming back? You know, the recognition that we're part of that community, and as we bring back more native and wild places, are humans re-inhabiting this? And we felt like we couldn't answer that in a positive way, that no, we weren't seeing that. So how do we engage the human component of the community to put themselves back into these wild places? And our answer some 20 years ago, Pat, was, well, what if we brought the very first human voices, the First Nations people's voices, their drums, their song, their music, their dance, brought that back to one of our prairie restoration areas, cut a big arena into a tall grass area, build an arbor, and put those dancers and singers and storytellers, musicians there, and invite the contemporary populace of Dallas County and Central Iowa, and invite them to come back and celebrate that awareness of that connection through the music and drum and dance. And it has been a beautiful thing here. Yeah. Since the first inception, almost, it'll be 20 years next year for us.
And you are awakening that prairie biome system.
Yeah, and that's the idea. This is how do we awaken that prairie and awaken people who are part of that prairie to their relationships and their presence in the prairie. And as you referenced there when we started talking, it's now called Prairie Awakening Awoke, because we feel like we have successfully accomplished the idea of bringing people back to the prairie and awakening the prairie and awakening the people. So to recognize that, we're calling it Prairie Awakening Awoke. So we are still looking for ways to continue to awaken people, but also to address, now that they've awoken and they feel part of this, how can they continue that? So, you know, offshoots of that have been involved with people helping us with seed collection and prairie propagation and all the pollinator efforts that are going on, and the healing of some Native American mounds that are on the site at the Keene Conservation Area. So there's a lot of waking up and a lot of rejoicing in the consciousness that has come from this.
And at the Keene area, it is west of Adel. We'll have some directions for people in Dallas County. What are the times?
It's Sunday the 10th day, and it's from 5 until 9. And so because it spans the supper hour there, there will be a food truck, a concessionaire on site so that people can come and enjoy the whole evening and have a meal while they're there. Because it is positioned in the middle of a tall grass prairie restoration, it's not an amphitheater. There's no formal seating, so we invite the public to bring lawn chairs or blankets that they can sit on. And not only will they get a chance to see and watch and hear this somewhat passively, there will also be opportunities for them to join in on the dance and engage themselves in some of the stories that are being shared. So it's a participatory thing, and it's a very family-oriented event. And it's free and open to everyone, and we'd love to have some of your listeners say, hey, I've never been there, but that sounds really intriguing. And there are a few things more beautiful, as you know, you've experienced personally, Pat, of being in a prairie in the beginnings of fall, and as the long light of the evening starts to glow across those prairie plants, and to hear those drums and the dancers and the vocalizations and the stories that are shared. It's a magical place to be.
And there is a native drum component. There will be drum, dance. How about the speakers?
Good. So the featured presenters that are going to be involved, one of them is a fellow by the name of Dallas Chief Eagle, who's from out of Pine Ridge, and he is a world champion hoop dancer. And so he uses the tradition of Lakota hoop dancing that hoop dancing is found in many First Nations. And he explains that story and its tradition, and then he'll do an exhibition. He and his daughter, Delcina, will, and it's a chance for people to see, as I said, a world champion at this tradition. And then after he's done his exhibition and had a conversation with the audience, then there's a second session at about 7:30 that kind of closes up the day for us, where there's a big bonfire and Dallas is around it telling stories, and it's particularly aimed at engaging children in the hoop dance. And so your audience can picture in their mind, here's this Dallas in full regalia around a bonfire as the evening light's coming down, and your children are there dancing with a world-recognized performer. One of the things about Dallas, you can Google his name, and one of the places he'll come up is the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts. So it's interesting to think that this guy who's presented out there in Washington, D.C. on that stage is now dancing in our grass arena here in Dallas County. So he's one of the featured presenters. The other featured presenter is an individual by the name of Jerome Killsmall, who's from out in Yankton, South Dakota. Jerome's a retired teacher of language at University of South Dakota and a nationally renowned performer. And what he's going to do is he's a traditional storyteller. And so, again, you can see there's a real family-oriented thing. Jerome will be telling stories that will not only engage the adults, but also particularly engage the children. And he's just a spellbinding orator, and he's a great lot of fun to have. So in between those presentations, Pat, we're going to have drumming by two traditional drums. One's the All Nations drum that's a local drum here, and the other is the Meskwaki Singers drum from over on the settlement. The other events that will take place are we're going to release a raptor. We work with Kay Newman and the SOAR organization, the Save Our Avian Resources, that you've done a lot of work with. And she always has birds that are ready to be released back into the wild, and it's become a tradition at the celebration of this awakening to welcome one of our relatives back to Keene by releasing them up into the skies above the arena. And so the audience will get a chance to see that too, Pat.
Yeah, I just might point out that these are world-class speakers, presenters.
Yeah.
And it's a real credit to your event that they feel it lives up to their link to humanity.
Yeah, we have a great relationship, Pat, with the Native community, and you're right. It's something that the Native community embraces and supports and wants to be a part of, and they've been instrumental in the continued and presence of this event and the growth, and why it moved from Prairie Awakening to Prairie Awoke is all because of the efforts of these Native people who so generously want to share their stories and music and their cultures, not forgetting their connection to humans in the wild and helping remember and helping us to remember that.
Yeah, and this year particularly, let's all encourage people to come out and send our good wishes to Howard Matalba, your key.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is Howard Matalba, Albert Crow Eagle, that's been a mutual friend of you and I for a couple decades here. He is going to the State Office of Archaeology had contacted me and said, because of Howard's work with the protection of Native burial sites and his work with the Governor's Native American Council, they would like to recognize his lifetime of efforts. And so there will be a formal honoring ceremony during the event where there'll be drumming songs that are honoring songs for Howard. He's going to be the recipient of an award from the State Office of Archaeology for his lifetime of work, and we're going to recognize him as Dallas County. And so it's a way of again, in a traditional sense, looking at these elders that are amongst us and recognizing what an elder is the keeper of wisdom and a guide for all of us as we negotiate our paths. And Howard has been those things for decades for us. And so it's going to be really special for those people who know Howard to come and share. And we're going to give an open mic to people that want to say a few words to Howard after the honor songs and the ceremony awarding him from the State Office of Archaeology.
Well, let's wrap this up, but let's share with the listeners that this is truly a lifetime experience, and the memories will live on and on. You're just doing a fantastic job with your outreach environmentally. Beyond the prairie resource, this is really an exciting and appropriate and just a wonderful event that Dallas County has.
Thanks for giving us an opportunity to reach out to your audience and invite them. And
let's see you down there. We'll look forward to the Prairie Awakening that has awoke. Dallas County, west of Adel. We'll have the directions on the website. Thanks. Or just run through the directions.
Well, the easiest way to get there is just, if you're coming off of I-80, is to get off of the Earlham exit. It's exit 104, and then there are the Brown County Conservation signs that have arrowheads on them that will direct you to the Keene Conservation Area. Yeah. If you're coming from the north, you'll be coming off of Highway 6. And if you're on Highway 6 that runs between Adel and Redfield, just watch for H Avenue. And again, you'll pick up a series of the directional signs, and they'll lead you down to the Keene Conservation Area.
A truly special area in central Iowa.
It was one that we were really happily surprised in. And I think it was back in April, the Des Moines Register, unbeknownst to us, their writers selected 7 areas in the state of Iowa that they deemed the 7 natural wonders of Iowa. And, of course, the ledges and many of the places that people are probably familiar with, Lus Hills, and we're all on there. But to our great joy, Keene Conservation was included as one of those, and we looked at that and we wondered, you know, we don't have those big striking sandstone outcroppings like the ledges or the geological formations, the Lus Hills. And in reflection, we thought, you know, I think really what they're recognizing here is that you and I have been involved as our careers with ecosystem restoration, and there's an individual in our profession that has kind of turned that and said, let's look carefully at our words. We have been trying to do restoration, but it is really restoration, and it's learning to remember and tell the stories of these places. And I think that may be why Keene was recognized, because it's one of the places, as Prairie Awakening illustrates, that the stories of that place are being remembered and retold. And so it's a joy. It's a crown jewel of restoration, and I think that's what makes it one of the natural wonders.
Yeah, head to the Keene Conservation Area, Dallas County, September 10th, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., and it's truly a remarkable event to share with family, loved ones, and we'll see you there.
I hope to see you. Thank you, friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye now.
Chris Adkins. And you're listening to KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 Story City, Ames.
Thanks to Pat Schlarbaum and Chris Atkins, environmental education naturalist for Dallas County, for bringing us information about this year's Prairie Awakening celebration at the Keene Conservation Area this Sunday, September 10th. Now, a legacy artists and writers collaborating workshop will occur on Monday and Tuesday, September 18th and 19th in Briggs Woods near Webster City. The leaders of the workshop are here with us. Maureen Siemens was the instigator and visionary of the workshop, which combines the talents of two others, Jen Bertie and Carmen Slater. Welcome, Maureen.
Welcome. It's nice to hear from you this morning, Emily.
Well, I'm just curious, how did you come up with the idea of combining journal writing and quilting in a workshop?
We tried it for the first time last year. We actually had a welding workshop in the park and a writer's workshop. And it's just nice to have creative people in the same spaces. They don't necessarily have to share the same tools, but they actually lend their own creative energy. And we have shared meals and shared bonfires, and you just let things roll. So it really worked out well last year, so we thought we'd do it again this year.
Well, you mentioned the bonfire, and I've heard very hopeful reports on the weather. If you don't have good enough weather to sit in a bonfire, you do have a big fireplace in the cabin, don't you?
We do. And, you know, the cabins are modern cabins. They've just been newly built native log homes that are situated in the park, and they're really lovely spaces. So if we did have bad weather, we'd still be able to sit around a warm table and collaborate and tell stories. I guess that's mostly what artists do, is tell stories. And I'll just share a story from last year. One of the things we really have a mission to create in our legacy learning environment is the whole idea of getting away from your life for a day or two and really letting some creative energies flow. And it's really hard in a busy world to do that. It's hard to find 2 hours, much less 24. But we find if people can do that, that the restorative powers of a bonfire in the park in September are really lovely. Last year, we were gathered around the bonfire, and we had a participant from the welding class and a participant from the writing class who were partners, and they said, would you like to hear a dulcimer? And we said, well, of course. And they said, well, they had two hammered dulcimers in their car, and they proceeded to get them out, and they played tunes like Shenandoah, old ballads like Shenandoah, under those majestic oak trees, under the bright stars and moon in Briggs Woods Park in September. And it was one of those moments I'll treasure till the end of my life. And I think that's why we do this. That's why we work hard on this.
It's for the serendipitous moments?
Yeah, well, and you know, it's just a beautiful time where people share, and it's really an intimate experience. And, you know, they've had a great day, each of them concentrating on things that were on their bucket list. And so often that is what we have, is a bucket list of things we'd love to do at some point. But, you know, it's really hard work to make that some point happen. And everyone has to kind of find that moment that they can take out of their lives and restore their batteries. And I think it's pretty important work.
Now, when you have advertised this, you said it was 2 days, and I'm not quite sure, when does it start and when does it end?
It starts Monday morning at 9. People are welcome to experience a cabin stay if they want to contact me about that. And it ends at 4 o'clock then on Tuesday.
Now,
there's a workshop over the weekend that's a welding workshop for holiday trees, and that'll be led by Doug Abbott. So the 16th and 17th, there'll be a creative workshop in the park, or the 16th, 17th, and then the 18th and 19th, Monday, Tuesday, will be the writers and the quilters.
But we should hear from the writer and the quilter about what they have planned.
So I think they're really both excited about coming. I think the people that participate in the workshops will be definitely the beneficiary of their energies. Carmen is downsizing some of his quilting legacy of materials and wanting to share. And Jen is bringing personal handmade journals, and everyone will get one. So it'll be a really special time. I think that Carmen and Jennifer have not actually met each other, and I think they'll find that that's an interesting relationship, too. Carmen comes to us from Colorado, and Jennifer from Humboldt. So it'll be interesting to have those two meet, as well as the people in their workshop.
Well, I think our listeners would like to hear from them, and I just happen to have a clip from yesterday's conversation with Jennifer that I'd like to play.
I've got a lot of experience with quilters in my life, so I use it as metaphor a lot. I'm glad that we're doing this. A lot of the techniques that I use in writing transfer to the concept that quilting does. It's just like a quilt is made up of, you know, smaller, more recognizable fabrics, at least the ones that, you know, my grandma was a Depression era woman who quilted with leftover pieces. I don't think maybe once in her 93 years did she ever make anything where she went to the fabric store and picked out colors to make something specific. She always used leftovers so that we never wasted anything. Every quilt I have that she made, I can look at and say, oh, those were overalls you made for me when I was 3, and that was a dress I had when I was 9, and that was something you made for this special occasion. You know, every piece is reminiscent of something smaller or some other occasion. When we write in this particular workshop, I think we're kind of looking for the storytelling of memoir. We're looking at for smaller pieces, smaller stories you can tell that make up a larger whole, which may be your life, you know, these smaller stories.
You mentioned that there would be time for people to share each other's writing and have the benefit of sympathetic ears.
I think that is one of the most valuable parts of workshop that you absolutely can't get at home. For example, Patty Dan has written a memoir that she might assign a word like ice and then asks her students to write for 15 minutes about the word ice. And then they share their productions on the word ice. And, of course, every attendee would have come up with some other memory surrounding that word. And in sharing, they can see what might make someone's story better, how using different words, different sometimes sentence structures, or just tapping into different memories overall have made that particular memory so powerful for that particular writer. And so that bit of sharing can just sometimes make the workshop experience the most valuable aspect of being able to come together with other writers. Sometimes it just shows you how powerful your own writing can be and inspire you to do more of it. I think being able to come together and have that free flow of ideas is just something we don't always get just sitting in our own houses. I hope people will be able to come and join us. I think it'll be a really good couple of days.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, where we've been listening to Jennifer Birdie, one of the artists collaborating in a workshop called Legacy Artist and Writers Collaboration Work Quilting Workshop on Monday and Tuesday, September 18th and 19th. Legacy Learning organizer Maureen Siemens was also here with us to share her vision of what the two-day workshop can mean for participants. And the workshop, as I said, is the 18th and 19th, but you would be do well to pre-register, and there'll be information on our website for that. Carmen Slater is ideally suited to collaborate with Jen, bringing quilting and journal writing together. You probably heard Jen talking about how the pieces of fabric in a quilt can be meaningful and tell a story. And I think Carmen, hi, are you with us, Carmen?
I'm with you.
And you have had lots of experience in using fabrics to tell stories. For those of you who are remember Carmen, or those of you who just have heard the name and say, who is that? I heard about him. Well, Carmen originally came to Ames, when was it? In the
72.
To guide the ECO program for middle school and high school students with a new degree from Iowa City in science education. Is that right?
That's correct.
So your expertise is also nature, which is the other subject for this workshop. Then you taught fifth graders at Northwood. Any of your Northwood students who are still around might remember those classes, where I think you probably studied a little writing as well as whatever else you do in fifth grade. But now I'd like to hear what you have plans for this workshop.
Well, it's interesting that we're going to be in the woods because I spent a lot of my growing up years riding my horse into the woods, especially on Sundays after my parents were trying to recuperate from working on the farm all week. And so, you know, being in the woods is always, nature has always been an integral part of my whole being. And then also my grandmother and mother were both quilters, so I grew up with fabric as a medium of expression. And I would often think about the early pioneers going across the prairie and interpreting their environment and saving every scrap and using it because it was so precious. And of course, that's not the case now. We have an abundance of fabrics. But being in nature at Briggs Woods there in Webster City, then we'll be using that as our inspiration to actually create some of our own kinds of fabrics rather than relying on found fabrics or embellishing found fabrics beyond what they already are, depending on the imagination and the inclinations of the students and what they bring to the workshop themselves, because that's where you have to start. You have to start with the student and then go from there and explore.
How do you create fabrics?
Well, there are screen printing techniques. There are dyeing techniques. I have another one where I've got a little instrument where you can do a band. I can use, I've got some pipes that we can drag inks over fabric. We can do photo imagery on fabrics. We can use the sunlight to do indigo so that you can actually make impressions from nature on fabric. So there are a lot of things that I'm cleaning out my cabinets.
yeah, Maureen mentioned that. And are these just your art cabinets, or do you have cabinets also from writing?
Well, I have both, actually, but I've downsized a little. So I've kind of been pulling things out that, oh, I'd forgotten that I had that. Yeah, well, I'll bring that, and the students can use that up. Plus, I'm bringing a lot of fabrics myself, and there'll be a lot of things that they can take home because I would like for them to disappear.
Well, when Maureen and when Jen told her story about her grandmother and how the quilts told stories to her, I was reminded of our work together on the quilts that many people in Ames may have seen at the Unitarian Fellowship, the three long quilts that hang permanently there, really a triptych of quilts. And they're strip quilts, which were, do you want to tell about that technique and what some of your ideas were about gathering the fabrics for that?
Yeah, because I created a lot of the fabrics for those, and there are like the doves of peace that are soaring on the upper edges, upper parts of all three of those quilts show the configuration of any kind of grouping of people, whether that be a congregation or whatever, and reconfiguring as new things come in and the flocks change their positions against each other. And the strip game technique, I got from that group of black women in the South that would do their strips at home, and then they would come together and put those strips together, and they were so contemporary, way ahead of their time. And so that was sort of the starting point of what I did with the strip technique that I used for those.
Yes, and it takes lots and lots of pieces of fabric to make those strips. I remember that. And
yes.
And you solicited fabrics from the fellowship members, and you even have a book about what each fabric was that people.
Right. I cut samples of the fabrics that were contributed, and then the story behind those are in that book.
Well, that will, I think, be a very fruitful workshop and a lot of fun. Maureen's idea was being together in such a beautiful place with creative people, drawing out their own ideas and creativity and inspiration would be a great weekend.
And I'm looking forward to returning to my roots.
From what year were your roots, right?
What year in Sigourney.
Okay, for those listening from roots in those areas, this is a beautiful connecting workshop coming up. Goodbye, Carmen. Looking forward to seeing
Goodbye.
You.
Goodbye. Great. Thank you.
You tell me it gets better in time. You say to pull myself together, pull it together, you'll be fine. Tell me what the hell do you know, what do you know? Tell me how the hell could you know? Till it happens to you, you don't know how it feels, how it feels. Till it happens to you, you won't know, it won't be real. No, it won't be real, won't know how it feels. Tell me, hold your head up, hold your head up, and be strong. 'Cause when you fall, you gotta get up, you gotta get up and move on. Tell me, how the hell can you talk, how can you talk? 'Cause until you walk where I
If you have just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. We are your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, Ursula Rudenberg, and myself, Joy B. Iowa State is back in session, and once again, we are a bigger town with lots of activity. As always, both the university and the community want to ensure everyone's safety and welfare. As part of that, Iowa State will be introducing a new program this fall called Green Dot. This program is part of an effort to proactively address any problems of sexual assault in cooperation. The program is being rolled out by Iowa State. This is a trigger warning. To the listening audience, this warning. We respectfully want to warn you that the following discussion can trigger strong emotions. This discussion is intended to inform the community and support survivors. It will include a discussion about sexual assault. If this is a sensitive and emotional issue for you, we encourage you to consider turning off the radio, if necessary, to your welfare. Lori Allen is with Access, where she is the ISU, Campus Sexual Assault Advocate and Prevention Coordinator. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you. It's good to be here this morning.
A little later, let's talk about sexual assault and its consequences, as well as how all of us can support survivors. Before we do that, though, tell us about the Green Dot.
Well, Green Dot is a program that's being used across the country at campuses as well as in high schools. And what we're finding is that Green Dot is a program designed to change the culture in an area, to have people feel comfortable stepping up and stepping in when they see something happening that's not right, especially when we're talking about power-based violence.
When will it be unveiled?
Well, there's a big unveiling party on campus on September 27th, which is actually 3 weeks from today. It will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and hopefully the weather will allow us to have it outside of Parks Library, just south of the main entrance there.
Okay, and who put it together?
So ISU has been working the last couple of years on prevention, and they brought in a new prevention coordinator in summer of 2016, and she's been working throughout the year. Her name is Jasmine Brooks, and so she's basically in charge of coordinating, but there are about 40 individuals from ISU and some partner agencies like myself from Access who went through a 40-hour training in July to learn all about Green Dot, and we've broken up into committees that, you know, there's a group that's working on the rollout and this celebration that we'll be having. Some of us are working with engaging other people on campus with the program, and some of us are going to be working on presentations for students and faculty.
Okay, and that's how it'll be unveiled?
It'll be unveiled on the 27th with music and T-shirts and free food and, you know, kind of interactive engagements for the students. It'll be, that's a time usually when students are having lunch and going to and from classes, so it's a good place and a good way to engage everyone. Hopefully people will want to stop and learn more about it and get some free food.
Yeah, because it's important for everyone's safety.
Right.
Can you explain the Green Dot?
Sure. I think the best way to look at Green Dot is if you could imagine like a map of the campus, say, and, you know, when you think about a movie where there's a plague or some outbreak of some kind, that everyone's strategizing over a map and there's a red dot where every incident happens. And it starts with one red dot, two, three, four. And pretty soon, you know, it's growing exponentially. And you go from 4 to 8 to 24 to 140. And all of a sudden your map is covered with these red dots where the incidents occur. And so at Green Dot, we think of those red dots as a place where someone's been hurt, where there's been an incidence of power-based violence. And it may be a sexual assault. It may be harassment. It may be bullying. It may be anything like that. And so the Green Dot program would like to work to counteract those red dots with green dots. And a green dot can be either a reactive action, like if you see someone who's in danger or someone who's been hurt, that you would respond to them in a way that's helpful. It can also be a proactive action, which might be if you hear a racist or a sexist joke, you just say, hey, that's not cool. Or you may offer, you know, like just a kind word and say, hey, how's your day going? Or if you see someone who looks sad or upset, just ask them, are you okay? Is there anything you need? And so pretty soon these green dots, whether they're reactive or proactive, begin covering the red dots. And we want to get to the point where there's so many green dots that it's hard to leave room for any of the red dots.
So the program is really oriented towards creating a cultural shift.
Absolutely.
Where you're trying to create a consciousness that leads people to take action.
Right.
To create a different culture than an abusive culture.
Right. And we want that to happen. You know, we don't want people to wait until they learn that a crime has been committed or someone's been hurt. We want them to recognize the signs that say, hey, this person might be at risk for, you know, being in trouble of some sort, and mm-hmm. empower people to say, you have the power and the responsibility as a member of this community to step up and say, hey, you know, how can I help? Or here's what I can do. And just to know that the safety of the community is dependent on everyone engaging fully.
So it's a culture of safety.
Right. Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Has this worked in other places?
It has worked. There's a great website called Live the Green Dot that has some information about statistics. But it was created by a professor who, her first name is Dorothy, I'm kind of blanking on the last name, but she created this program for a high school use in Kentucky. And the first year that she used that, the bullying and sexual assault dropped by about 50% in that mm-hmm. high school. And so she realized that she had something that she had, you know, like clicked into that was engaging students. And so from there, using, you know, research-based data and, you know, she's a sociologist, a doctor of sociology. She created this program that is now being used at campuses across the country.
Hmm. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where can somebody get information on the program besides, I know you have this event coming mm-hmm. up, but mm-hmm. Is this going to be put out throughout campus in every dorm in every building, or do
yeah.
they go to certain places?
You know, and again, we are a community of over 38,000 students, so it's hard to reach every single student, you know, and that includes grad students and commuter students and non-traditional students. But having things present on campus, we're hoping that because this is a high traffic area, we also see that Jasmine is working with student conduct and or with student wellness, excuse me. She used to be in the Dean of Students office, but she's now collaborating with the student wellness group. And so if students want to learn more about it, they can stop by the Student Wellness Center, or there is a website, Iowa State University Student Wellness, and it talks about all of their programs, including Green Dot. So that's the best way to access information at ISU or stop by one of the things that you might see. We talked a little bit about Green Dot at some of the freshman orientation, and it was well received.
What is the secret to getting people to take these ideas seriously?
I think that this is so in our minds and in our media these days that students as well as community members have an awareness of some of the things that are happening on campus. We have statistics that show us that about 1 in 4 or 5 women in college will be confronted with sexual assault or harassment or stalking during their time there. And the rates are a bit lower for men. But you know, students are concerned about their safety and the safety of their friends. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we know that it can't all be, you know, handled through law enforcement, and that's kind of a brash way of doing it. What we want to do is create this culture that students want to participate in creating a safe campus mm-hmm. for everyone and feel like they're empowered to make some decisions and do some helping to people who might be in danger.
That's really interesting. That's in itself is a cultural shift. You know, 30 years ago, everybody was in denial. And, mm-hmm. and at that time, people mm-hmm. said there was really no such thing happening in
right.
Ames, Iowa. And
right.
today, people are actually concerned about it.
Well, it's very interesting. Iowa State University in spring of 2015 took part in a nationwide project called the Campus Climate Survey. And so about 1/5 of the students at Iowa State filled out the questionnaires about their experience on campus. And what we found is maybe there's a slightly lower incidence of risk at Iowa State, but it pretty much matches what we were expecting and what you see nationwide. And I think it's like not the right place to focus your attention if you say, oh, well, in Iowa, you know, the risk is a little bit lower because it's still too high. Mm-hmm. And it informed us that there is a need to address these situations because it has a lot of effects on the campus community and, of course, on the students who are affected by this.
So if you have just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. We are your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, Ursula Rudenberg, and myself, Joy B. We have been discussing the Green Dot program being unveiled by ISU and Access of Ames, our community-based sexual assault and battery persons care center, which works together with ISU. Green Dot will be a proactive program designed to reduce the occurrence and damage of sexual assault. Could you talk to us about some serious consequences of sexual assault to individuals and to the general community?
Sure. Well, as an advocate, I work directly one-on-one with people who have been affected by sexual assault or stalking or harassment. And, you know, people experience this trauma, which really interferes with their normal life, that they see the world a little differently. What used to be a safe place is no longer a safe place. They're always kind of watching out for what happens. And so, of course, just as it would affect anyone in their daily life, one of the things that is affected is how students are able to participate in their classes. And we don't have the situation is not the same for every student, depending on sort of what their resiliency level is and what their support level is from friends and families. We see people being affected in different ways by this. But often, you know, there's concerns for personal safety. There's concerns for being on campus. And so the school has accommodations that they can help the student with. And as an advocate, I usually begin by helping with some trauma counseling to normalize the situation for the person so they feel like, you know, they can go on. And then we talk about what they would like to do because the ISU Police Department as well as Ames Police Department and the campus administration student services, we're all on board with victim-centered, you know, actions afterwards, that we want the person to feel that they're in charge of what's happening. So they do offer some accommodations if they feel they might need to move to a different, if they're on campus housing, they can request to go to another location for campus housing. If they are carrying a really heavy load or just more than what they can deal with, they can drop a class or two. They work with them really, you know, specifically to each student's individual needs to make it possible for them to stay in school if that's what they want to do. They also can help them if they feel like exiting for a time will be beneficial. But again, we all like to feel that the victim is the one who's making those decisions just based on the information we're giving them.
Yeah, it's hard to overstate how dramatic an event this is and how much it changes everybody's world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Part of that is, you know, people who are traumatized by any sort of crime, but especially sexual assault, the brain just works differently as that event is happening. And so they process that information differently. And you talked earlier about trigger warnings. Sometimes people have things kind of residing in their brain that they don't even realize they have. And so, like, being in a location, like hearing a sound or a similar voice or a situation where they feel they may not have easy access to leaving, those things can all make it really difficult for them, like, to stay and function as they did before the assault happened.
So some of these may not appear right away, these triggers and things. So what are some of the long-term consequences? Can you talk about that?
Sure. And, you know, I think one of the most normal things that I see when I work with people at first is that they just want this to go away. And it's like, I just want to forget about it. I don't think I want to do anything. I just want to, you know, get back to my normal life. But what they find is that it's such a large event in their life that they can't just simply put it behind them. And so what might happen is their sleep may be interrupted, like they just can't get to sleep, or they may be woken up by terrors, or they may have like fears that are exacerbated, seeing another person walking down the sidewalk at them. Some of those things, trouble concentrating, anxiety, there are just a lot of things that can come up for them, and there's no timeline. It's not like this will happen after a day, a week, a month. It's just something may trigger it, or they may find the place and, you know, the time and the space to deal with it. And it can be really interrupting and devastating sometimes. It can be somewhat empowering, though, too, to like work through this and sort of integrate it back into your life and understand that what happened was not your fault. We always, you know, really hold that in front of victims, that there's nothing that they could have done or should have done differently. And we just work on, here are some skills, here are some helps that, you know, will help you move through this experience.
And another thing I wanted to talk about, which I think is extremely important, is how can family members, friends, and the community members best support survivors? And then also if you can talk about the resources that are available.
Well, when I talk to friends and family members, one of the things I like to remind them is that, again, always start by believing and, you know, thanking people for telling them, because what we find is not many people do share their stories. It could be as low as only 1 in 10 people report to anyone that something has happened to them. And again, try to support them by asking, what do you need from me right now? It's not helpful to say, like, you have to do this, you have to, like, report this or not report it or whatever. It's important to just believe them and to make sure that they have the support they need, that they're in a safe place, and then to help empower them to get the resources. And so, you know, Access, I feel, of course, I work with Access, but we know a lot about the resources in the area. We understand how the legal process works. We understand the administrative process if you want to report on campus. And we also just understand that this should be victim-centered, that you get to choose what your resources and recovery will be. We also host a support group for survivors on campus every Tuesday from noon to 1 o'clock at the Margaret Sloss Women's Center. And you can just show up there. You don't have to register or even be affiliated with Access to participate in that. And we have a lot of resources, again, through the Crime Victims Compensation Program, those sorts of things. And these can all be offered to victims without their having to make a report. And it's not that I'm trying to impress that you should not make a report. It really is an individual thing. And we just like you to have all the information about the reporting processes so you can decide what it is you'd like to do. The phone number for the Access Sexual Assault Crisis Line is 515-292-5378. That number is answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Thank you, Lori Allen. We're speaking with Lori Allen from Access, and where she's the ISU Campus Sexual Assault Advocate and Prevention Coordinator. And you talked about helping somebody feel empowered. And in a way, the experience of being assaulted sexually is at heart fundamentally a disempowering experience.
So yes, we call it a power-based violence, that there's always someone who holds more power than the other,
right,
is why these crimes happen.
And that's the source of the trauma, too.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Thank you, Lori. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts for this hour, Susan Franson, Joy B., and Ursula Rudenberg. That's me. Thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, you heard Pat Schlarbaum, Chris Atkins, Maureen Siemens, Jennifer Berti, and Carmen Slater. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI, and you can also hear it online at KHOI-FM and find links and an archive of this show and links to the guests and the information you heard on the program. Today's show was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Thank you, Rebecca. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Till It Happens to You by Lady Gaga.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. Morning masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Mary Greeley Medical Center, providing inpatient and outpatient services on a continuum of care, located at 1111 Duff Avenue in Ames. Find out more information at www.mgmc.org. That's mgmc.org.